at over 60%. Kyle noted very, very quietly. Earth had a population of roughly 14 billion. If his superiors signed off on Operation Dragon, Kyle was probably going to have to resign. He had the sneaking suspicion most of JSOC would follow him. They might have drafted up the plans for Operation Dragon, but they'd be damned if they'd carry them out. Kyle didn't even believe in hell, but he suspected he'd end up somewhere equivalent regardless if he was the architect of the destruction of humanity's homeworld. But there was a reason he'd started with Dragon, and the shocked silence on the virtual conference told him he'd made his point. Dragon was the least complex and least risky of the plans from an immediate perspective, though it carried massive long-term risks. Kyle doubted the rest of the galaxy would allow even demonstration bombardments of Earth to go without retaliation. Operation Hydra, he finally continued, is closest to the conventional war we have been fighting, with, of course, a level of strategic aggression they've rarely seen from us so far. Hydra wasn't necessarily the best choice, but the op plan was near and dear to Kyle's heart. It had every hallmark of over-the-top, calculated aggression that marked his own career and tactics, drawn on a strategic scale. The combined fleets of the Alliance outnumber Marshal Walkingstick's forces 2-1, he told them. He has a far larger reserve of reinforcements, but those hundreds of starships aren't on the frontier with us. The map around him changed from the inner systems of the Commonwealth to the front with the Alliance. Hydra calls for us to strip our systems of all mobile defenses and deploy the entirety of our starship strength forward into a single offensive, built around three striking forces, he explained. These six systems, the systems in question flashed red on the hologram around him, are key components of Walkingstick's logistics pipeline. Without them, he only has the resources at his main fleet base in the Niagara system to sustain active operations for a few weeks at most. Taking out these systems would also involve the destruction of 30 to 40 of his capital ships, clearing the decks for an all-out assault on the Niagara fleet base. With the capture of Niagara, the defeat or destruction of Marshal Walkingstick's fleet, and the capture or destruction of the Commonwealth Navy's Rimward Frontier logistics infrastructure, we will be in a position to either carry out deeper offensives or negotiate a peace in place. A peace in place would only buy the Alliance time. The previous Imperator had told them all that at the end of the last war, and history had proven him right. Hydra is risky, he warned them. It leaves much of the Alliance almost unprotected for a single strike at Walkingstick's strongest point. If Walkingstick launches his own offensive at the same time, Hydra will doom the Alliance. A successful Operation Hydra does not guarantee the end of the war, but it will unquestionably seize the strategic momentum, if we have enough ships left after it to prosecute the war further, Kyle noted. The last option my team and I have put together is Operation Medusa, he continued again after a moment. The map of the frontier between the Alliance and the Commonwealth moved and expanded, until he stood in the middle of a rotating display of stars that showed the entire Terran Commonwealth. Operation Medusa is an attempted one-punch knockout. Like Hydra, it calls for us to strip our defenses bare and move forward with a single do-or-die strike. Unlike Hydra, a successful Operation Medusa will win the war. Kyle smiled. That got everyone's attention. Bright red dots now speckled the display rotating around him, highlighting star systems. Operation Medusa will strike at the very fundamentals not only of the Commonwealth's day-to-day operations, but of the belief structure of the Unificationists. That fundamental belief is simple, that instantaneous communications via the QCOM network require the consolidation of the human race into a single nation. He smiled grimly. He could, if he twisted his brain just right, see their point. He just didn't agree with it, and certainly didn't agree with their right to impose that consolidation at the point of a sword. Those instantaneous communications require the manufacture of entangled quantum blocks and the maintenance of QCOM switchboards to allow point-to-point FTL communications, Kyle continued. Like most of us, the Commonwealth combines the manufacturing facilities and the switchboards aboard single-purpose communications space stations to minimize gravitational interference in either process. The Commonwealth has 12 general-purpose QCOM switchboard stations, 2 government reserve switchboard stations, 2 military reserved switchboard stations, and a top-secret reserve facility that most of their military officers don't even realize they're carrying entangled particle blocks for. He let the toothy Cheshire Cat grin return to his face. For those of you whose implants aren't keeping up, which was absolutely nobody in this audience, that is 17 stations. He gestured to the red highlights. 3, including the one no one is supposed to know exists, are in Seoul. The other 14 are in various systems throughout the Commonwealth. Medusa calls for us to destroy them all in a time-synchronized assault, hitting every station across the Commonwealth in one strike. Kyle paused to let that sink in. The opening moves of Operation Medusa are quite similar to Hydra, he told them. We will assemble a mid-sized strike force to target systems across the frontier in what we will make look like an attempt to undermine Walking Stick's logistics support. The purpose of this part of the operation is to hold Walking Stick's attention while we send 15 assault forces totaling over 200 capital ships on a deep strike operation into Commonwealth space. Icons lit up the map as he spoke, showing the path of the assaults. We will use our own QCOM networks to guarantee a simultaneous attack. Some of the switchboard stations are in relatively unfortified systems. Others are in the very heart of the Commonwealth. As with Dragon, we may need to raid supply depots on the way in, a potential risk to any chance of surprise, but we will be sending ships clear across the Commonwealth, nearly to the border with the Stellar League. A coordinated strike with the League would have made any of the ops easier, but while the Commonwealth might not be entirely certain it had been lured into launching a punitive expedition against the League knew perfectly well they hadn't raided Tau Ceti. They were understandably unwilling to work with the Alliance. The destruction of the Commonwealth's FTL communications network is a threat they have few plans or structures in place to handle, he continued. The idea of someone striking at the connections that bind humanity together is anathema to the unificationists. Gods, the thought makes my skin crawl. What plans they have are purely theoretical, with few exercises carried out at anything above a single station scale. Loss of communications will paralyze their military, political, and economic structures. Without tactical FTL communication, even Walking Stick will be incapable of prosecuting a war against us, and the internal fracture lines where star systems were annexed by force will be drastically aggravated. None of these systems are easily or quickly replaced. We estimate a minimum of 2 years to get even a single switchboard station online on an emergency basis, and more like 20 to 30 to completely reconstruct the system. Not least, he concluded with a cold smile, because they will feel the need to build a more secure, more fortified, and more redundant system. Medusa will buy us a generation. More importantly, though, Medusa will stop all Commonwealth expansion for a generation. The destruction of their communication network will force an internal focus they haven't had for over a century. Our sociologists suggest a 63% likelihood that such an extended period of inward focus will severely undermine the unificationists' current dominant cultural position. Given that we would be able to provide FTL communication and humanitarian assistance to factions we want to support, we could use direct and indirect social engineering projects to assist that changeover. Dragon or Hydra might end the war. Medusa has a chance of ending the Commonwealth's aggressive expansion permanently. The options presented, Kyle stepped aside to let the leaders of the Alliance argue. He and JSOC were only present at this point to answer questions, but most of the flag officers had been briefed well enough in advance to provide at least the first layer of answers. It took almost 45 minutes of argument before Joseph Randall turned his glare back on Kyle and asked the question he'd been waiting for since the beginning. You drafted these plans, Admiral Roberts, he said bluntly. You swore an oath to serve the Federation and have fought the Commonwealth for this entire war. Many say you fired its first shots. You're the hero everyone looks to. Randall couldn't quite keep his snide distaste out of his voice, even as he was trying to use Kyle as a hammer against the rest of the Alliance. What would you suggest? For one brilliant moment of amusement, Kyle wondered what the reaction from this assembly would be if he recommended surrender. So far, Randall had been the loudest advocate of Dragon, and while none of the major powers had spoken in favor of surrender, several of the single-system nations had. But as Randall pointed out, Kyle Roberts had sworn an oath to defend the Federation. Recommending his nation's surrender would fail in that oath. I think Medusa is our best option, Senator, he said calmly. Dragon would make us galactic pariahs. We might defeat the Commonwealth today, but if we bombarded Earth, we would never know peace. Hydra is less ambitious, but requires almost the same level of risk as Dragon. If we're going to gamble everything on one throw of the dice, I suggest we gamble for everything as well.
That sounds like your reputation, Admiral, Randall snapped. And what command would you take, Roberts? The strike at Sol? The greatest glory?
Kyle chuckled. I am a mere rear admiral, Senator Randall, he pointed out. The strike at Sol will require a full admiral to command it. I will serve where the Alliance needs me. I've had enough of glory for one lifetime. The senator coughed, but to Kyle's surprise, he nodded his understanding.
I don't believe, Randall told the gathered conference, that this is a decision we can make in an hour without consultation. Admiral Blake, there were briefing documents prepared, I presume? He asked.
There were, she confirmed.
Please have JSOC distribute them to everyone, Randall said politely.
I remind everyone that all of this is classified at the highest levels. A leak of these plans could doom us all. Review them. Discuss them with the necessary members of your administrations. We shall reconvene in 48 hours. And then, I believe, we must make a choice.
I hope, Imperator von Koryl interjected, his voice a smoothly trained instrument, that we make the right choice. The leadership of this alliance has already gone down in history once for our mistakes. I would not wish to become like my father, an ignored voice of reason.
Randall chuckled. I think that is unlikely, my lord, he acknowledged. Whatever happens, we aren't going to let the Commonwealth get back up this time.
Chapter 5. Castle System. 0700, August 3rd, 2737, Earth Standard Meridian, date, time. New Cardiff. Kyle Roberts was less than enthused with many aspects of working a desk job on the Federation's homeworld. After 2 years of serving on the front lines, though, he'd accepted that he needed the time away from the psychological crush of war. The fact that he woke up most mornings next to Captain Mira Salas was definitely an additional selling point, though. His fiancée had been assigned to the homeworld for psych evaluation after having her command battered to pieces around her. She'd promptly been scooped up by the same immense analysis, design, and support machine that had dragged Kyle into JSOC, and assigned to the team designing the Alliance's latest generation of battlecruisers. Like JSOC's mission, that project was now complete. They'd both be getting new assignments soon, and the big red-headed admiral slipped an arm around the elegantly tall black woman in his bed, holding her close for a long moment as she yawned awake. Both of them were entirely capable of snapping awake instantly, but that was rarely required here. Once they were back in the field, they'd need that skill again, but for now, they could wake up lazily holding each other.
What's on your docket today? He asked softly, kissing her hair.
More virtual war games, Mira told him, shifting to lean against him. We think we've locked down most of the designs for the Armada ship classes, but I know Admiral Vong wanted the battlecruiser team to run op force for some more tests for the carrier design. She didn't ask about his day. Kyle was cleared for Project Armada, the design project for the next generation of Alliance capital ships, but Mira wasn't cleared to know more about JSOC than that it existed.
So I'll have Drake and Eastoman-class ships for my next fleet? He asked.
His lover chuckled. 3-year construction timeline. You know that.
I know, he agreed, concealing a moment of fear beneath his usual cheer.
Unless their plans worked out perfectly, the starships designed by Project Armada would never see service. One way or another, the war would be over before ships being laid down in September 2737 would ever see active duty.
He was checking the time and was about to suggest a productive use of the minutes before they had to get heading to work, when his implant buzzed with an incoming call. He checked the code and sighed. While Sterling would understand him taking a minute or so to respond at this time of morning, there was no way his aide would have calmed him at this time at all, unless it was important.
"Duty calls, my love," he told Mira.
"I know the siren song," she replied with a soft smile. "Get going, Admiral."
Kyle stepped out of the single bedroom in their apartment and took the call in the living room. Running the communication through his implant, there was at least no need for him to get dressed or for Sterling to even know that he wasn't dressed yet.
"Oh, thank the stars," his aide said as soon as he answered. "I was worried you were asleep."
"You do have a priority alert that will wake me up," Kyle observed.
"And we all hate that thing," Sterling confirmed. "I was about to use it anyway. You have Admiral Blake and 3 senators scheduled to be in your office in 63 minutes.
His implants allowed him to control the spike of adrenaline that news delivered, and he considered the situation. Even though he and Mira had acquired an apartment together, both currently worked at the Fleet HQ, and they hadn't purchased a vehicle. They used New Cardiff's network of self-driving transit pods, which ran a pathing algorithm to match passengers with destinations and get everyone where they needed to go as quickly as possible. On a good day, he was 20 minutes from his office. In rush hour, he could easily be 40, and he needed to shower and dress.
"Can you get an air car to the apartment?" he asked.
"I coordinated with your security detail while I was waiting for you to answer," Sterling confirmed. "Vehicle will be on your building's roof in 24 minutes.
Barring some kind of incident, then, the military aircraft should get him to work in under 10 minutes.
"All right, Archie. Hold down the fort."
His aide laughed.
"Sir, what in the void gives you the impression that I've made it to the office, or even into uniform yet?"
Relegating Marines to taxi driver status always felt silly, but Kyle had to admit that he'd never found a more reliable transportation service than a Castle Federation Marine Corps armored air car with a Marine pilot. The air car delivered him to the landing pad on Castle Federation High Command's highest tower, where Archie Sterling was waiting for him with a reserved elevator. In the end, he reached his office with enough time to spare to inhale a cup of coffee and was waiting, appearing perfectly calm despite the unexpected rush to be ready, before his visitors arrived. When the Marines escorted Admiral Blake and her guests into his office, he rose with a salute and a cheerful grin.
"Good morning, Admiral, Senators," he greeted them. "Can I get you something to drink? Coffee? Tea? Beer?"
"Your beer fridge has a reputation," Senator Maria O'Connell noted.
The petite red-headed senator for the planet Tuatha smiled.
"That said, I'll take a coffee. It's a bit early in the morning, even for me."
"Coffee," Blake grumped. "As big a cup as you have."
Senator Madhur Nagarkar of New Bombay took tea, and Senator Joseph Randall took nothing. The blue-eyed man with the silver hair propped up the office wall in silence as the others sat. The first time Kyle had met Randall, he'd been a fading blonde, but no hint of gold remained in his hair now. Despite their disagreements and a not insignificant number of assassins, even Kyle had to admit that Randall had stepped up as a wartime leader in an impressive manner.
He'd managed to line the Federation's merchant houses, first families, and industrial cartels up in a row that was churning out warships, starfighters, and missiles with phenomenal efficiency. It had taken its toll.
"To what do I owe this unexpected visit?" Kyle asked as he served the drinks himself. Somehow he suspected this wasn't a meeting he wanted his steward in.
"You rammed it past me," Randall snapped. "Give him the damn thing, O'Connell."
The senator for Tuatha chuckled.
"Show some grace, Randall," she replied.
But she took a small jewelry box from inside her suit jacket and dropped it on the table.
"The Senate has signed off on a new promotion list," she told Kyle as he took the box. "Congratulations, Vice Admiral."
The box contained two pins, each with two gold stars, to replace the single star currently on his collar. Slowly, carefully, Kyle examined them, then laid the box back on the desk.
"I've only been a Rear Admiral for 6 months," he pointed out.
16 major offensive fleets, Roberts," Blake told him. "Operation Medusa was approved, and the Alliance doesn't have 16 O-9s and O-10s qualified to command a fleet action who aren't trapped behind a desk."
"Medusa is approved?" he asked, leaning back in his chair.
"The Imperator is a big fan of yours," Randall said. "So, it seems, are most of my fellows."
"If we're going to take as big a risk as we need to take, we can't justify doing less than going for the throat," O'Connell told him.
"We promoted a half dozen new Rear Admirals as well," Blake added, "and the main staff is going over JSOC's operations plan as we speak."
"And JSOC?" Kyle asked.
"Dissolved as of noon today,"
the CNO told him bluntly.
"You've done your job, and we need your collection of over-aggressive mavericks on command decks as we launch this damn affair."
He nodded thoughtfully. "Timing is going to be everything," he noted. "Shifting command structures is going to be a pain, but—"
"But we need our best on deck," Blake finished his thought. "That's not your problem, Admiral. Trust that it's being taken care of."
"Your problem, Roberts, is that you've talked the Alliance into one of the biggest goddamn rolls of the dice in human history," Randall told him. "So tell me, what happens if you're wrong? If this whole mess blows up in our face?"
"Worst case scenarios?" Kyle smiled. "There were a few in the briefing, but the big one is that Marshal Walkingstick kicks off his final offensive while our fleets are in the Commonwealth. We could destroy the Commonwealth and find ourselves Walkingstick's new empire."
"And you had a plan for that, right?"
the senator demanded.
"Or were you planning on dragging 60 star systems along with you on your usual headlong charge?"
"Operation Medusa called for a stalking horse fleet to carry out raids along the frontier, to keep Walkingstick distracted,"
the newly minted Vice Admiral replied.
"We'll need to hold his attention, keep him watching his flanks, without letting him realize that the majority of our fleet is somewhere else."
All of this had been in the briefing, but Randall was clearly angling for something.
"Joseph, if you've something you want the Admiral to say, you may as well ask him,"
Nagarkar said bluntly. The dark-skinned New Bombay senator looked tired, with bags under his eyes that showed on even his skin.
"After everything he's pulled, you expect me to be comfortable with the Stellar Fox's judgment?"
Randall snapped.
"We're following his ideas into the dark, and I've never seen this man be anything but an over-aggressive glory hog."
Kyle's smile thinned.
"No, sir. All you've ever seen in me is the man who caught your son committing treason," he told Randall. "You've never judged me on any other standard than that. But the Federation needs us to be better men than that."
"Doesn't it?" It was probably the wrong thing to say. The tension in the room ratcheted from nervous discussion of the war to an admiral just all but accused a senator of attempted murder. But if the Federation, if the entire Alliance, was going to be following a plan Kyle had drafted, He and Senator Joseph Randall needed to clear the air. It was silent for 10 seconds as he held Randall's gaze. 20. 30. Then the senator blinked and sighed, the tension draining away as what might have been tears glittered in the corner of his eyes.
"Void take you, Roberts," he snapped. "He's my son, and he sold us out to the Commonwealth."
Randall was silent again, then nodded.
"He did. Didn't raise him as well as I thought."
He shook his head.
"Void take you,"
he echoed, but there was no heat to it.
"Will this work, Admiral?"
Kyle glanced over at Blake, who gestured for him to answer.
55-45, he told the senators. "If Medusa fails, there's only about a 1 in 3 chance we get enough of the fleets back to hold out afterward. Medusa comes with a 30% chance of losing the war in the next 6 months, but doing nothing leaves us with a certainty of losing the war in 12 to 24 months. It's the only option I'd recommend above surrender, sirs, ma'ams," he concluded. "It's a huge risk, but it's a calculated one with an over 50% chance of winning the war outright."
"I'm not going to pretend I like you, Admiral," Randall told him, levering himself off the wall. "But you're right. I've misjudged your record because of that dislike. Do your damned job. Prove you're worth that piece of gold my fellows gave you."
With that admission, the senator for Castle calmly walked out of Kyle's office.
"Well, that was more positive than I was expecting,"
O'Connell muttered after Randall left.
"Put the damn stars on, Admiral Roberts. You and Admiral Blake have work to do."
Shaking his head, Kyle obeyed, replacing his single gold stars with the pairs in the box.
"What do we do now?" he asked.
O'Connell downed her coffee.
"I was here to give you the stars," she pointed out. "Nagarkar joined me after Randall attached himself, just in case we needed an extra set of lungs to shout him down. Apparently, we should have just left you to deal with him on your own."
"The senator and I disagree on many things, but we serve the same cause," Kyle told her, allowing his normal cheer to return. "When the Federation calls, he and I will both answer in our own ways."
And if that call stopped Randall sending assassins after him, Kyle would take it as a win.
"Which benefits us all," Nagarkar rumbled. "Thank you, Admiral, for your service and your honesty. Good luck with your mission."
The two senators stepped out, leaving Kyle alone with Admiral Blake.
"And my mission?" he asked her. "Waving your reputation under Walking Stick's nose," she told him.
"We're still sorting out exact strength levels, but you'll be assembling a new 41st Fleet for the purposes of your stalking horse raids. I'll freely warn you that you won't have nearly the strength you'd like. No matter how we harped on the need for an all-out strike, we're still reserving 20% of our starship's strength for home defense."
"That still leaves us 200 ships, Kyle concluded. "We could be a lot worse off."
"About the only thing that's certain right now is that you're getting Gaia and Elysium," Blake told him. "And that's only because they're both in the castle system, and Elysium doesn't even have an assigned CO yet."
"Is she even combat ready?" he asked.
DSC-080 Elysium was the latest Sanctuary-class ship, the newest sister to his old Avalon.
"Undergoing space trials as we speak. Gaia has been headlining the home fleet since she was finished, but, like sending you, sending either of the Titan-class battleships is a message outside all numbers."
The Federation had only built 2 modern battleships before deciding to give up on the type for the foreseeable future. Kronos and Gaia were the only 80 million cubic meter battleships in existence. There were also 6 Sanctuary-class carriers and 4 Conqueror-class battlecruisers of a similar size. And those 12 ships, the Castle Federation's most modern, were the only 80 million cubic meter ships around. At all. You're probably going to end up with a fleet of our best and the Imperium's best, Blake told him. Something that will punch well outside what its numbers might suggest, but we're also going to be sending you right at Walking Stick.
That's the job, ma'am, Kyle told her. A half dozen 80 million cubic ships will turn more heads than twice that in 30 million cubic ships pulled from the reserve. I can make Walking Stick hunt me if you give me one ship, ma'am, but I'd rather a fleet.
You'll get a fleet. That's why you got the second star, she said. And it'll be a fleet worth taking into battle, I promise you that.
We need 16 of those, he admitted. Logistics are going to suck.
You gave us the outline. Now it's up to JD Logistics to make it work, Blake replied. You have this office until you move spacewards, but we'll make sure the flag deck on Elysium is clear for you in a few days. I suggest you take some leave first, she continued. Once we kick this off, all leave is canceled until it's over. And you and your fiancé will want to celebrate.
I'm still wrapping my brain around the star at all, ma'am, Blake chuckled.
You won't be the only one, she told him. Mira got her first star, though she won't be part of Medusa. She'll be taking command of the gunship flotillas around Castle, one of several officers tasked with a fallback if this strike fails.
It was a job that needed to be done, but a thankless one. The fleets of sublight gunships that guarded the Alliance's core worlds wouldn't stop a vengeful Commonwealth Navy from crushing the Alliance if Medusa failed. But they'd have to try. And if Medusa succeeded, they'd never see action.
Lucky her, he murmured.
Who's letting her know?
She's meeting with the head of Armada at lunchtime, Blake replied. Don't let the cat out of the bag before then, or her boss will make your life hell.
I'd prefer to leave that task to our good friend Walking Stick. Chapter 6. Via Somnia System. 1500, August 7th, 2737, Earth Standard Meridian Date Time. DSC-062, Normandy. Task Force Midori shut down their Alcubierre Stetson drives with a quivering tension. QCOM channels with 7th Fleet had told them that Via Somnia remained in Alliance hands, but Vice Commodore Rokos agreed with his fellows. Normandy, like the rest of the task force, entered Via Somnia with her weapons online and every starfighter manned. If the former Commonwealth fleet base had been retaken, they were as ready to fight their way clear as they could possibly be. Via Somnia was an uninhabited system, but when 7th Fleet had taken it away from the Commonwealth, they'd managed to take the massive Navy base mostly intact. What damage had been done had been repaired, and the immense facility continued its orbit of Dreamer, Via Somnia's dead rock of a third world. 4 capital ships orbited with the base, and 2 more swam through the outer system on a continuous patrol around Dreamer's Alcubierre interfering gravity well. An immense battleship loomed over Task Force Midori as they emerged, a fifth again the size of the TF's largest ships.
Launching CSP, Russell's flight controller chanted, and acceleration slammed the Vice Commodore back into his chair. There was a pause as the officer switched over to a private channel.
What the hell is that?
The sign we're in the right place, the CAG replied with a chuckle. The immense warship was adjusting her course, arcing to come in protectively behind the battered task force like a worried sheepdog.
That's Kronos. Nothing else is that big.
Well, Normandy's scanners disagree with you, the lieutenant replied. I've got another ship at the Navy base that's just as big.
Russell checked, and a moment of nostalgia rushed over him as he recognized her.
That's Avalon, he told his officer. Feels wrong to see her anywhere without the Fox in command.
So, we're safe?
I figure that's Rothenberg's call, Russell replied. Though I'll admit it, I'll question his orders if he sends us after 7th Fleet.
All right, everybody, we can stand down, Vice Admiral the Elector Parth Rothenberg instructed his senior officers a few minutes later. I've touched base with Vice Admiral Connors, the Renaissance Trade Factor officer commanding 7th Fleet.
and we're clear to move in and dock. We'll be replenishing all of our supplies from the Navy base and replacing our starfighter losses from the defensive squadrons. If you weren't flying Falcons already, well, you're going to be flying Falcons, he concluded dryly. The Castle Federation had taken the point of the assault and lost several ships taking Via Somnia. So by a logic that Russell couldn't bring himself to disagree with, it had been the Castle Federation Space Force that had moved in two starfighter groups to help secure the newly captured base. Once we've docked, we'll rationalize our fighter deployments and make sure our repairs are up to date, Rothenberg concluded. I haven't been told much, but my understanding is that there's work coming down the pipeline for us. Are we going back to Midori? Someone asked. There was a long silence on the channel, and then Russell felt the Admiral shake his head through the implant link. Even I'm not being fully briefed on what's coming, he admitted. And I've been told I can't share what the Joint Chiefs have told me. Unfortunately, it's been made very clear that we're being earmarked for other operations. For the moment, Midori is going to remain in Terran hands. I don't like it any more than you do, but I am assured that the President was involved in that decision. Rothenberg let that hang, waiting for further commentary. Set your courses, people, he ordered finally, and make sure your crews get some rest. After this last week, they'll need it. FTL was safe. There wasn't even much to do well under Alcubierre Stetson Drive, so Russell knew his people were, in one way, quite well rested. But he knew exactly what Admiral Rothenberg meant. There was safe because the laws of physics said nothing could touch you, and then there was safe because you were surrounded by friends and allies. Russell knew he was going to sleep better once Normandy was docked. Once Task Force Midori was fully inside the protective umbrella of the Via Somnia fleet base, Russell pulled his carrier space patrol back aboard Normandy. His fighter group was better off than many of the others, but he'd still lost a lot of people getting out of Midori. To his surprise, Captain Herrera was waiting for him on the flight deck as he exited his fighter craft.
Sir, he saluted crisply.
With me, Cag, Herrera ordered. He was a short, gaunt man with skin as dark as interstellar space, but he moved with the certainty of a falling avalanche. Russell knew better than to ignore even a seemingly polite request from his boss. The captain led the way to Russell's own office, however, and took a seat across from the CAG's desk.
What a fucking week,
Herrera exhaled in a single breath.
How are your people holding up?
Rough, Russell said after a moment. SFG-292 got away better than most. We only lost 20 ships. Putting aside the MSDF's suicide charge, the Alliance had lost a third of TF Midori's starfighters. That Normandy's SFG-292 had only lost 10% of her fighters meant Russell's people had been lucky. Just not lucky enough. We lost a lot of friends in the other groups, he murmured. LaCroix and I weren't close, but we'd known each other since the war began. Russell chuckled. Since back when she tried to seduce the Fox, though he was just Wing Commander Roberts then. Herrera's responding chuckle was tired.
Your people always take the brunt of it, he said quietly. Are they going to be ready for action?
How soon? The CAG asked bluntly.
Tomorrow? Only in desperation.
Give me a week, and we'll be a bit rusty around the new crews we'll steal from Via Somnia, but we can fight.
Give me three, and I'll match my people against the Commonwealth's best. Might need to hold you to that, Herrera told him. If Walking Stick took Midori,
then he's kicking off his endgame, Russell agreed. Which means I'll be ecstatic to get that 3 weeks before we go toe-to-toe with the Marshal's best.
You'll get it, Herrera said grimly. I won't send you into battle before you're ready. We've lost too many people and too many ships doing that when we had no choice.
Don't make a promise you might not be able to keep, the CAG replied. No choice happens. It might happen again. Chapter 7 Castle System
1700, August 7th, 2737, Earth Standard Meridian, date, time. New Cardiff and Castle Orbit.
They gave me a star, and all I got was a pile of gunships,
Mira Salas grumped, leaning into Kyle's shoulder as the two embraced at the edge of the landing pad.
And what are they giving you, Vice Admiral?
Kyle chuckled. At last count, I'm shepherding 13 capital ships and 9 logistics ships, he told her. My understanding is that I don't get to keep them. All I've been promised is Elysium and Gaia, but that's the flock I'm taking out to Via Somnia.
Must be nice to be important, she said, but she was smiling as she said it.
The flotilla of 60 Gallant-class gunships Salas had been given command of might be restricted to the castle system, but it represented over twice Gaia's firepower and 4 times her crew.
I don't know about that, he replied.
They're putting you in charge of a good chunk of castle's defense and sending me off as far as they can. Plus, you get to sleep in your own bed at night.
The Gallants didn't have flag decks.
Rear Admiral Mira Salas would lead her command from a buried operations center on the surface, though tradition required she spend as much time aboard her ships as possible regardless.
A bed that's going to be cold and empty, Mira said. You be careful, Kyle, she ordered. I want a living husband-to-be, not a dead hero. Are we clear?
He chuckled again and kissed her, ignoring the collected officers waiting around them as the surface-to-orbit shuttles swept down.
I have every intention of coming back alive, he told her. You think a minor obstacle like the Commonwealth's top commander and 100 or so warships are actually going to put me in danger? Have you met the Stellar Fox?
Mira shook her head.
I have, actually, she pointed out. I've also met Kyle Roberts, and my impression is that they're not necessarily the same man, and I want them both to come back to me.
You keep Castle intact, and I'll come home to her.
And you, he promised. Behind him, Archie Sterling coughed.
Admiral, sir, the shuttle is here, and tradition does say you board first.
Kyle sighed and nodded, wrapping Mira in his arms again in a fierce embrace she returned tightly.
I will be back, he assured her. Through void, through hell, through summerlands or war, I will return to you. I promise you.
She kissed him.
I know. Now go. You can't keep 22 starships waiting while the Admiral makes out with his fiancée.
He stepped back and grinned at her.
Why not? Isn't rank supposed to have its privileges?
Go!
She ordered, but she was smiling as she said it. Elysium looked so much like Avalon that it took Kyle a moment to recover his composure. He'd commanded 2 ships after Avalon, but the big Sanctuary-class carrier still held a special place in his heart. His new flagship was her twin. Even knowing she was a different ship, there were no differences Kyle could pick out from the outside. A few sensor arrays or Stetson stabilizer emitters in different places, but nothing identifiable as his shuttle approached the kilometer and a half long abbreviated arrowhead. Behind the big carrier hung the equally immense form of one of the only 2 Titan-class battleships in existence. Gaia was longer than the carrier, not needing a flattened prow for a landing deck, and bristled with a massive array of firepower. Past her, none of the other ships assembled into Kyle's convoy were visible as more than tiny white triangles at best. 4 more carriers, 4 battle cruisers, and 3 strike cruisers filled out the 13 warships he was taking out. His understanding was that he would keep Elysium, Gaia, and Carolus Rex, the 3 most modern ships in the convoy, while the remainder of the ships would be joining Vice Admiral Rothenberg as the Imperial officer took command of a newly expanded 7th Fleet. Kyle may have drafted the plans that were now setting the Alliance's fleets into motion, but he didn't have need to know on the final details. He could guess which target Rothenberg was going after, but he hadn't been briefed. For that matter, if they were following the plan, Rothenberg wouldn't have been briefed. Even the admirals leading the strike fleets wouldn't know their destinations more than 8 hours in advance of going FTL. It would be obvious to the admirals who would be leading the strikes at the closer switchboard stations that something was going on. Some of the fleets would have 7-week flight times. Others would only have 3. Flag officers weren't going to miss dozens of starships disappearing and entire fleets going off the grid for an entire month.
"Elysium Control has provided landing clearance," the pilot announced. "They've been advised we have 41st Fleet actual aboard and are clearing a priority lane."
Kyle sighed. 41st Fleet currently is officially, what, 2 ships? He murmured to Sterling.
"Maybe," his aide-turned-chief of staff replied. "But one of those ships is Elysium, so Captain Novak wants to put her best foot forward after all."
"Well then, I suppose I should prepare to be impressed, shouldn't I?"
"It would be polite, sir."
The shuttle slid to a perfectly calculated halt in the middle of Elysium's massive flight deck. Neat rows of Falcon-type starfighters and Vulture-type bombers lined the walls, tucked away into alcoves that allowed them to be fueled, cleaned, and maintained without interfering with landing operations. Interspaced with those alcoves were the massive hatches covering Elysium's fighter launch tubes. 24 tubes to a side of the hangar, linked to 12 on each of the carrier's 4 broadsides. In an emergency, the automated trucks, arms, and systems of the flight deck would feed a fighter or bomber into each of those tubes every 15 seconds. Assuming she had a flight group in the tubes, Elysium could clear her decks in 1 minute. It would make her deck an extraordinarily dangerous place for a crew member who wasn't paying attention, but the crews knew their jobs. To Kyle's knowledge, there hadn't been an accidental fatality during launch operations aboard a Federation carrier during the entire war so far. Injuries were another story entirely, but given the speed with which the systems slung around multi-thousand-ton starfighters, a lack of deaths was impressive enough. His own attention was unavoidably drawn to the god's cursed cheap red carpet Elysium's crew had rolled out, with its flanking double file of Federation Marines in full dress gear. A bosun's pipe trilled, and an amplified voice bellowed over the flight deck.
41st Fleet arriving!
Kyle made his way carefully down the carpet and returned a quick salute from the tall, dark-haired woman waiting at the other end.
"Welcome aboard Elysium, Admiral Roberts," Captain Ivana Novak told him. "May I present my XO, Senior Fleet Commander Sung Yi? I believe you've met my CAG as well."
"Indeed I have," Kyle replied, offering his hand to now Vice Commodore Michelle Williams Alvarez. She'd come a long way from the traumatized officer he'd offered a psych discharge 3 years before.
"It's good to see you, Michelle. The extra circle and the wedding ring suit you."
"It's your fault, you know,"
the starfighter pilot replied with a smile. She and her new captain could have been sisters, both of them pale-skinned, dark-haired women.
"You keep dragging me into situations where I have to be a hero."
"I don't suppose we can hope to be luckier?" Sung Yi asked.
The XO seemed to almost fade into the background next to his captain and CAG, a dark-skinned older man with a shaved head and tired eyes.
"There's an old saw about how heroes happen."
"When someone screws up," Kyle agreed cheerfully, concealing a concerned look at the XO. With 41st Fleet's mission, the last thing he needed was a hesitant XO aboard his flagship. "Given the war we have to fight, though, sometimes just surviving is heroism enough," he continued. "And sometimes acts of heroism are the only way forward. We have a job to do, after all, Commander Yi."
"We do,"
Captain Novak agreed instantly.
"Chief Campbell, see to the Admiral's staff and their bags. Can I show you to your office, sir?"
"Of course."
The speed with which Kyle had blazed past being a one-star admiral meant that he'd never actually had a flag officer's office aboard a starship before. He'd been in them. As captain of Avalon, he'd been a flag captain himself, but they hadn't actually been his space before. He hadn't realized just how much computing support was available to a flag officer from their desk. Just from this room, his implants could access tactical feeds and strategic information,
and set data analysis runs on a dedicated set of hardware and AIs. The room itself was nothing to sneer at either. He'd spent most of his time in Avalon's Admiral's office paying attention to the occupant, but he now realized the room was large enough for small-scale meetings on its own, and had the same kind of hollow conferencing gear that they'd used for the JSOC presentation. From here, he could arrange a virtual meeting with every officer in a fleet without having to actually get out of his chair. Of course, since it was now his office, there were some familiar items.
"Your beer fridge made it up yesterday," Novak told him, gesturing to the machine in the corner.
It certainly had a beer fridge in it, though it also had a coffee maker, tea maker, and general mixed drinks facility that was hooked directly into the ship's water lines.
"I don't know if it's stocked," she continued, "but I suspect your steward..."
Kyle had already popped the fridge open and removed a pair of beer bottles, inspecting the labels. "Took care of that," he concluded for her, sliding a bottle across the desk to her. "New Cardiff's finest microbrewery. Try it."
"I don't drink on duty," she said slowly.
"I won't make you," he said cheerfully. "But I will give you permission." He dropped into the big chair, sighing in relief as it automatically adjusted to his form. "If you don't want the beer, coffee, tea, the drink machine can do just about anything." Novak shook her head at him, but cracked the beer and took a sip as she seated herself. Kyle smiled and leaned back against the chair. "All right, Captain, brief me," he instructed her. "I'm familiar with Avalon inside and out. What's different?"
"Not much," Novak told him. "Wartime construction. They didn't want to mess with what worked. My understanding is that there's a new generation of Alliance standard 85 million cubic meter ships coming down the pipeline, but they're building the sanctuaries to the template."
That was Project Armada, not that Kyle could say much. A new generation of battlecruisers, carriers, starfighters, and now star bombers. "If there is such a thing," he stressed, "we'd only be laying down keels now, years before we'd see new ships."
"And that's assuming we're still here," she said grimly. "Hard to read the strategic briefings without seeing that as a problem, not least from how much more restricted they are now than they were 2 years ago."
"I'll get you cleared for the full versions," Kyle promised. "There's stuff going on I can't brief you on yet, but as my flag captain, you'll need to know exactly where we stand."
"That doesn't sound promising, sir."
"It's ugly, is what it is," he warned her. 41st Fleet, once fully assembled, is going to be seeing what we can do to take the momentum back. If you've any concerns about Elysium, your crew, or your starfighters, I need to know. We're only in Castle for 24 more hours, Captain."
"That's a fast move-out," she admitted.
"I only came aboard 3 days ago. Yi ran Elysium through her trials, though she passed those with flying colors. We haven't had time to shake out problems yet." "Shake out what you can," Kyle ordered. "We don't have any more time. We'll have some more in transit to Via Somnia, but..." He shook his head. "From there, it looks like we'll have all of 5 days to exercise the assembled 41st Fleet before we move out."
"Do we get briefed before that?" Novak asked.
"Sure. About 24 hours before we move," he told her with a chuckle. "There's a lot of cards in play, Captain, and the Alliance is keeping most of them under wraps. That said, speaking of Yi, he's not exactly following my drift," Kyle noted. "I don't need people who want to be heroes, Captain, but the last thing we need is an XO who's determined not to be one."
"He's seen action twice already," Novak said. "Wounded in action at Kamadian, and decorated for pulling people out of the bridge after it was wrecked."
"Damn. He was at the massacre?" Kyle asked. A lot of people had been, but he thought he'd known every senior officer of Alliance Battlegroup 17. He'd been BG-17's flag captain in that god-awful disaster, after all.
"Seconded to the Kamadian Navy," Novak confirmed. "He was acting as tactical officer on their flagship and ended up saving the captain's life, along with about 6 others, before he took an ugly gut wound from shrapnel."
So he understands how men end up heroes, Kyle said. He wasn't going to pretend that anyone who'd served at the Kamadian massacre wasn't going to get a little bit of extra leeway from him. They'd all watched a world die together, after all.
Chapter 8. Castle System. 2200, August 7th, 2737, Earth Standard Meridian Date, Time. DSC 080, Elysium. Castle Orbit. In a perfect world, it wouldn't have taken Michelle Williams Alvarez 6 months to get back into a combat command. In that perfect world, however, Vice Commodore Williams Alvarez wouldn't have been the only person to actually command one of the Alliance's new bomber formations in action. The success of that command, along with the rest of what then Captain Roberts had got up to out beyond the Alliance's rimward borders, had trapped Michelle in a months-long training command as the Alliance churned out its first wave of bomber crews. After what felt like 2 or 3 trillion lectures, classes, and training flights, she was finally back where she belonged, aboard a carrier with a starfighter on the flight deck with her name on it. The only good part of the stint on a desk was that Nurse Commander Angela Alvarez had managed to take a month of shore leave on the capital planet in it. Enough time, apparently, for them to turn a shared apartment into an impromptu wedding. The admittance chime for her office chimed. Enter. To her surprise, it was Sung Yi who slipped into the room, almost furtively, and took an uninvited seat in front of her desk. Michelle had come aboard the ship alongside Captain Novak, and had barely managed to pick up the executive officer's name, let alone get to know him.
"Can I help you, Commander?" she asked.
She and the senior fleet commander were both O-6s, splitting command authority over the supercarrier's naval and space force crew between them.
"Probably," Yi admitted. "Eternal stars know that all of this is hitting like a ton of angry bricks. A week ago, I was running space trials on our girl and carefully ignoring the betting pool over who'd end up in command. Now we're shipping out in less than a day as part of a void-cursed fleet that's pretending to be a convoy, and nobody seems to know just what our actual mission is going to be," he continued. "You've served with the Fox, right? You were with him at Istanbul in that mess, right?"
"And Tranquility, too, if you were wondering," Michelle said slowly. "I wouldn't count on knowing much more than you do about the old man, though, Commander. There's always been a few links in the chain of command between him and me."
"You know more than I do," Yi told her. "Only time I was even in the same system as him, a couple of billion people died."
"Kamadian."
"Kamadian," he agreed. "No one is going to miss the son of the Void he blew away for that, but Void knows if any of us were the same afterwards."
"I wasn't there," Michelle said. "But I doubt it. Our counselors are good, but that kind of thing changes you."
Her own trauma had been more personal and extended, but the Navy's doctors had pulled her through it. Pulled her through well enough that she was married now, much as the thought terrified her.
"The Fox, some say he's a glory hound, even a loose cannon," the XO finally admitted. "I mean, Void, he rammed a battleship, made a tactical alliance with a Commonwealth officer. He's something else."
"He's something else, all right," Michelle agreed carefully. "The last damn thing the Commonwealth ever sees coming. He earned his rep, Commander Yi, the good and the bad alike. Earned it the only way you end up a hero, by being the last man standing when all your enemies are dead."
"I find being a hero usually involves a bunch of people being stupid," Yi retorted, "including the poor bastard who rushes in and ends up with the medal."
Michelle laughed.
"That's fair enough, Commander. But I can assure you that Roberts isn't setting out for glory. He's setting out to win, which is a different thing entirely, isn't it?"
Yi snorted.
"Fair, I suppose," he echoed.
"Thanks, Keg. I needed to talk to someone who knew him, and it pretty much had to be you."
Anyone junior, and he'd have been asking whoever he spoke to speak ill of a superior. There was always a special case between XO and CAG, though. They needed to be able to be utterly honest.
If Roberts is dragging us into something secretive, it's something big,
Michelle told him.
And he'll need our best. And he'll get it. Because he's the Stellar Fox. And like I said, the Commonwealth is never going to see him coming.